Hello and welcome to the Texas Tribune Tribcast. This is the real Texas, Ted Nugent, celebrating freedom, liberty, and the great spirit of Texas defiance. A happy hunting season to everyone in the Grand Republic of Texas. And now, here's your host and my blood brother, Reeve Hamilton.
Thank you, Mr. Nugent. This is reporter Reeve Hamilton.
Brother Nugent.
That's right.
Blood brother Nugent.
This is reporter Reeve Hamilton here with the Tribcast for the second week of October. Joining me is CEO and editor-in-chief Evan Smith.
What I want to know is what the ceremony was that was involved in you becoming his blood brother.
We can't speak about it.
What did he do to animals and or you?
It was worth it. That's all I'll
was
say.
Was it?
Yeah. Editor Emily Ramshaw is here.
Hello, Reeve.
You have no comments.
She's terrified of
Ted Nugent defiling Reeve Hamilton.
Like whoa! I never said that was defiling.
All anyone does around here is talk about Ted Nugent. I have nothing left to say about Ted Nugent.
Do you have anything to say about Ben Philpott of KUT in the Texas Tribune?
Many things. He is an excellent outfielder.
She's lying.
All right. Well, let's move on to our first topic, which is the recent reshuffling of the committee chairs in the Texas Senate.
Speaking of defiling.
I think Evan has something to say about this.
Blood being spilled.
Yeah. This was a fascinating exercise of Lieutenant Governor's power. Let's go back a few months to the July 31st runoff when the people of Texas reelected David Dewhurst Lieutenant Governor. Let's think of it that way. He returns to his position as presiding officer over a body that is significantly more conservative than it was last time and is more conservative than he is, if you believe Ted Cruz and if you believe the people who supported Cruz and opposed Dewhurst in the Senate primary. That was the principal knock against him, was that he was insufficiently conservative. I feel compelled to say, only in the state of Texas would David Dewhurst be considered insufficiently conservative, but never mind that. So Dewhurst comes back to the Senate with a Senate that is more conservative than the one he last saw in the 82nd session. And in contemplating who should lead committees, we all assumed that for Dewhurst's own benefit as presiding officer, he would faint to the right. And faint to the right he did. Florence Shapiro voluntarily exited as public education chair. She's retiring from the Senate. And he replaced her with Dan Patrick, who is quite conservative, who will lead the Public Education Committee as a conservative chair and has already talked about vouchers being a huge thing for him in this next session. Dewhurst has gotten behind that immediately. We know the governor's behind it. And so vouchers may be the voter ID or the sanctuary cities of the next session. On the higher ed side, if you recall, Reeve, the public and higher ed committees used to be one committee. They were separated some time ago.
I've heard tell of this.
And Senator Zaffarini from Laredo, Democrat, and something of a lightning rod for controversy on the right, was chair of that committee. And there was some question as to whether Dewhurst might combine the committees once again and make Patrick chair of the combined committee, cutting Zaffarini out. In some ways, that would have been a better thing for Zaffarini than what ultimately happened, because at least she could say, well, there's no committee to chair, so I wasn't actually cut out of the whole thing. It was just that my committee went away. He kept instead the higher ed committee as a separate committee, but made Cal Seliger from Amarillo, Republican, the new chair. Zewhurst. That was pretty funny.
Yeah. Is that like a Zoolander?
That sounds like a bad CBS comedy. What happens when Judith Zaffarini and David Dewhurst become the same person? It's Zewhurst Thursdays on CBS. You know, it's got this great comic premise.
Well, I don't think it'll be happening anytime soon.
After he took her off for higher ed committee. The unlikelihood of that. The reality is so Seliger is in and Zaffarini now has, I guess it's open government, Sunset Advisory Commission.
Yeah, it's basically the committee where the Sunset Review stuff will happen.
This was obviously an effort on Dewhurst's part to nod to his critics. Otherwise, why would he cut Zaffarini out?
Especially because Zaffarini is somebody who he's traditionally had quite a strong relationship with.
Working relationship with, yep. Most deaf.
And she's sort of very clearly the most openly passionate person about higher education in the Texas Senate. She basically fought to get that committee created in the first place.
And, she was often seen as a defender of UT ahead of all the other systems, but, I think that's probably an unfair knock on her, Although the greatest mourning for the passing of her committee chairmanship was probably on the 40 acres, because they did consider Zaffarini to be one of them. She's, in a literal sense, an alumnus. But I think in a less literal sense, she was someone who they viewed as a protector of all things Longhorn. And so Seliger, who is a Dartmouth guy, He's an alumnus of Dartmouth College, but has a wife who is, I believe, an alumnus of the university. Has kids, I think, who may have been through the university.
Attending.
And, you know, what I think the view from...
I'm not sure that there's a huge difference between being a Dartmouth person and a UT person.
Oh, no. But there's a huge difference between being a Vanderbilt person and everybody else, though, right? What's that? What do you mean there's no difference between being a Dartmouth person and a UT person? Well, I think it is materially an interesting fact.
In wonky higher ed
that
land.
The chairman of the higher ed committee in the state of Texas is not himself a graduate or herself a graduate of public university.
Really? I feel like that's neither here nor there.
Why?
I just don't feel like, I mean, that's sort of this insider-y Texas thing that, you know, you have to be an alum of a Texas university in order to understand the state's university.
No, but I think the perception of where Seliger's experience set came together is not the same as Zaffarini's. I don't think that there is. Look, I think Seliger is perfectly capable of chairing the higher ed committee. In fact, we're about to announce that we're going to have Seliger at the Boston Club for a Triple Live conversation on December 6th, and I'll certainly
ask to that announcement.
I will look
embargoed.
Right. I will look forward to asking the Dartmouth question, but. No, I think it's an interesting thing that.
Plus, it's cold out there at Dartmouth.
The difference
UT is an elite university.
A small private elite college, an Ivy League school, versus the public universities, which are largely under the province of the.
So what conservative legislation is he going to shepherd through? If you got vouchers,
well,
in
the big question.
So that's an interesting question because Seliger is perceived to be not. You would agree he's not a movement conservative in the same way that the Dan Patricks of the world are.
No, but the big question I think for the Higher Education Committee is probably, are they going to get rid of in-state tuition for undocumented immigrants, which was not a bill that garnered enough support to really move anywhere.
Where did Seliger fall down on that bill?
He didn't have to fall down on it because
what do you know about Seliger's point of view about that?
It didn't. Well, we're talking later. We'll see.
Embargoed.
Todd, we'll just edit that in actually later. Right. We know already that of the members of the Senate, so Hancock, Paxton, and Taylor all told me a few weeks ago at the Trib Live conversation we did at the Austin Club that they would all be in support of getting rid of in-state tuition. Kevin Eltife subsequently told me, Senator from Tyler, Republican, that he would be in favor of getting rid of in-state tuition. So
we'll just assume you're talking about Republicans.
But what about
you say
the guy
otherwise.
At the top of all
Birdwell,
this?
Birdwell
is the one that carried it last session, and he's going to file it again.
But what about the Rick top, Perry? I'm talking about the one who carries the veto pen.
Well, Rick Perry, famously,
he said at the Tribune Festival that he was open to considering.
He said he would be open to having that debate. He's looking forward to having that debate. He also said he didn't expect it to come to his desk and said that the current policy was the correct one for Texas.
Right.
But he'll have the conversation.
Yeah, if it happens to get to his desk, he hasn't said that he wouldn't sign it.
Look at how much time Rick Perry has spent on higher education in the last 3 weeks. It's been over the top. You know, as recently as this morning, he's on national television talking. Every day I get a new alert from the governor's office that he's out at a different university, you know, making some new higher ed pitch. I mean, this looks to me like all that he's planning on doing heading into the next session. I mean,
But in-state tuition is nowhere to be found in what he's touring around the state and country talking about.
No, not at all. I mean, it's not a subject.
Look, you could argue that one of the sharp objects on which his presidential campaign was impaled was his defense of in-state tuition at that debate in Orlando.
Which is why it shocked me beyond anything that he stood beside that when you were talking to him at the Trib Fest.
I mean, I don't think he's going back on that.
No. I mean, he had a reason to go back on it after being killed in the primary.
If the will of the Texas legislature is to get rid of it, he has also left the door open to.
Well, so that's my point, and that's really your point, which is what does Seliger as chairman of the higher ed committee do? I think the assumption is Zaffarini was not going to go there. She would have done everything in her power as chairman to make that go away.
This has been a big sort of point of contention for Zaffarini and Dewhurst, right? Is that Ted Cruz brought this up repeatedly during the U.S. Senate campaign and said that Dewhurst had put this Democratic chair in the committee and she killed this bill. When sort of Zaffarini's policy has always been to sort of, she will speak out against bills, but if a bill has the votes in her committee, even if she disagrees with it, she'll pass it out. And Birdwell has been very open about the fact that
Brian Birdwell from playing the Ross Ramsey explain everything role.
Yeah.
This is Senator
Republican
Brian
of Granbury.
From Granbury.
He's been very open about it. He just didn't have the votes. They couldn't get enough support. Because really, this is one of those issues, like so many in Texas now, where the disagreement is within the Republican Party more than it is Republicans versus Democrats.
And so the composition of the higher ed committee, which is also in the hands of the lieutenant governor, that is as important as the chairmanship. Because if the committee is populated by people who the lieutenant governor knows
would vote for
will support an overturning of in-state, then if the tradition has been, if the votes are there, got to bring it up, got to pass it, then that'll happen presumably whether it's Seliger or Zaffarini.
And then it'll be up to the moderate House to...
Well, you know, the House... The interesting thing about the House this time is the House is going to play that role. The House is going to be the saucer that cools the cup on a couple issues. I actually have some real question as to whether there are enough votes in the House to pass vouchers.
Well, and we talked about this a couple of tribcasts ago, the idea of, you know, the rural Republicans were the ones that helped defeat vouchers when it was tried, you know, a few years back. But you now have several rural Republicans that are more Tea Party ideology, and will they, you know, just kind of use their ideology as opposed to what the constituency has in the past, you know, been against vouchers? But will they go against that constituency for ideology?
So I think on in-state and vouchers both, you have an interesting situation where the Senate's conservatism may be the pivot point for a lot of the discussion at the Capitol, and whether the House ends up going with the Senate or not remains to be seen. And of course, Seliger as chair of higher education is going to command a greater portfolio of issues than just in-state. You know, the governor's entire higher ed reform agenda will ultimately have to be housed there to some degree, right?
I mean, well, he'll, to some degree, a lot of his reform agenda is sort of on the shoulders of the universities, right?
Well, but, right, but surely, but you know, Zaffarini used her position as chairwoman of that committee to mobilize, formally or informally, the opposition to the parts of that agenda that she didn't like and that others didn't like. And that joint committee that she and Branch put
Joint
together,
Oversight Committee on Higher Education.
I wonder what happens to
that. Excellence, governance,
right,
and transparency.
What happens to that now with the absence of Zaffarini?
That's an open question. I mean, she's still the co-chair, and you know, if it gets re-upped at the end of the interim, we'll see.
Your theory that goes away, though?
I think a lot of people would expect it to go away. Usually these are one-term.
Right, so we talked about Seliger, and just to put a wrapper on this question about the chairmanships, there was really nothing else consequential that happened in the course of these appointments. I mean, Tommy Williams replacing Steve Ogden.
Well, Dan Patrick was
more or less
big,
a foregone conclusion.
Right. I mean, the
education Patrick
shifts
we mentioned,
were the big
but
ones.
Look, Jay Nelson was a return to her post atop the Senate's version of health care, right?
Yep, and the big Medicaid, right? I mean, which is going to be a huge budget.
You know, what Dewhurst did was shore up his right flank with these appointments.
Should there have been someone?
Right. Yeah.
Who else would have been the education chair, the public education
chair?
Well,
it was Seliger or Patrick, and then sort of toward the last lap of this race, a couple of us around here heard that Bob Dole's name had popped up as a potential compromise choice. But it ended up being Patrick, and that was probably what was likely to happen all along. And so,
the question was sort of which
will be entertaining to have Dan Patrick as chairman of public education. He's always an entertaining person to watch, and he'll do work that we'll be all paying attention to. You know?
Right. The question of which thorn Dewhurst wanted to have in his side. Did he want to have Patrick in his side, or did he want to have Zaffarini in his side?
Well,
that's a personal question.
It's a subjective question.
One of the things that might come through Seliger's committee, the Higher Education Committee, is if they want to tweak any of the state's laws regarding using race in admissions decisions, which is something that's on a lot of people's minds this week. Mm-hmm. Actually, as we're talking, they're doing oral arguments in the U.S. Supreme Court on this Fisher versus University of Texas case, which basically challenges UT's use of race for consideration in some admissions and could affect that practice all around the country. Basically, it puts all of affirmative action at risk. Now, the thing is that we won't actually get a decision on the case until well into or even late into the session. So if the lawmakers want to mess with the current laws in advance of that decision, then they will have to do it sort of before it comes down, or really quickly at the end.
What they've done before, like with healthcare legislation, when they're waiting for the federal health reform ruling, is they've passed legislation that is contingent on the Supreme Court ruling. If the Supreme Court says X, you know, this then would automatically take effect, which is what they could do. You know, they might be silly to try to mess with it before they know.
Well, they have sort of prepared for it in some ways, right? Mm-hmm. So UT has this policy where UT is allowed to cap the amount of top 10% students they take in at 75% of their Texas slots, and the remaining 25% that are below the top 10% is where they can use race as sort of a small factor.
Mm-hmm.
But when they gave UT the permission to cap top 10% admissions, they said, if the court ever decides that you can't use race as a factor in letting these students in, then you have to go back to all top 10% admissions. So basically, you know, what's at stake specifically for UT is whether or not they will have any discretion.
Any flexibility.
Mm-hmm. On who they admit into their university from in-state.
Mm-hmm. Do you think that the legislature might revisit the top 10% rule yet again?
It's at 8% now, right?
It's at 8% at UT.
Oh, yeah. Just at UT.
We refer to it colloquially as the top 10% rule. Although that's not technically the case at UT.
Rule.
But do you think that that rule might be back into play again at some point?
That's a good question. You know, I mean, you look at, you know, yeah, I mean, it could be back in play. Obviously, they were willing to mess with it in 2009.
Right.
And not all the schools don't all love it. You know, they don't like having their hands tied.
Yeah. But how many schools have their hands tied as much? Isn't UT the only?
Nobody has their hands tied as much as UT does. UT, the demand for UT is so high that, you know, it would wipe out their entire class.
I mean, A&M can still admit everyone that is within the top 10% and still have more people to admit in their classes.
Right. And now, of course, the ironic thing about this whole case and the thing at UT is that top 10%, it basically is a way to get around affirmative action, sort of to create diversity without having affirmative action. It's also predicated on the notion that Texas K-12 schools are all sort of segregated.
That's right.
You know, that's his own problem. But the race-based admissions, which only come in play for people outside the top 10%, and race-based is probably overstating it, but that's how people refer to it. The results of that actually bring in a much less diverse class than the top 10%. So this little chunk that they're fighting over is actually sort of one of the least diverse sort of subgroups of the incoming class.
How involved is the original plaintiff in this suit in it at this point? I mean,
Abigail Fisher?
Yeah.
She was in the New York Times the other day.
She did her first ever interview in the New York Times. So you should see she would have gotten a better job if she had gone to UT. I'm sure LSU, her alma mater, and her current employers.
Thrilled to hear that. They're not going to publish that in a Career Center brochure.
That's one of the interesting things about the case is that she, you know, her test scores and things did not make her a natural candidate for admission, no matter what her race was.
Mm-hmm.
And it's one of the things that sort of, you know, they'll be talking about today in the Supreme Court, and the Supreme Court will have to look at to see how much ground she really has to stand on in this case, given that there's already precedent for allowing race to be a tiny factor in admissions based on the 2003 case.
So she wasn't a National Merit finalist or anything then?
She's a very accomplished cellist. She plays the cello.
Said without irony.
That's a skill.
You know, actually, the cello section in the LSU marching band is pretty famous.
Shut up, Ben.
But it is one of these weird things. We have this like flurry of excitement about it, but we won't actually hear for a long time what happens.
Oh, right. It'll be the end of the Supreme
Obama
Court's
care.
Year, right?
Yeah.
It'll be June. See you in June.
The flurry now, and then see you at the end of the session.
Yeah.
Well, I hate to jump back to vouchers real quickly, but you were talking about the idea of what the legislature might do not knowing what this ruling is going to be,
mm-hmm.
And would they go ahead and jump in and tweak it anyway. Does the same thing apply to vouchers? I mean, can the legislature go through a major overhaul of how they fund schools like vouchers without having that final decision in, what are we thinking, May on the school finance system?
I think the likelihood of the school finance lawsuits being resolved by the end of this session is not very high. I think everyone's assuming that kicks ahead to the 2015 session, that the impact of those rulings would not be felt for another session.
Well, I think you're still playing with sort of different enough concepts that you could pursue vouchers without worrying.
But I will say, actually, I mean, I don't know that this is really a direct answer to Ben's question, but there has been a comment or two in this vein from people who say that one of the arguments against vouchers this session may be that everything is so much in flux that no one's going to want to put in a plan that would ultimately have to change based on the outcome of the Supreme Court of the court cases.
Yeah, and that, I mean, that's kind of what we've been hearing for any kind of school finance changes. We're not going to do anything until
but
we hear from the courts.
But vouchers have become such a political hot potato that to not address it or not try to pass it, I think, would be seen as a failing on the right.
Even if they
Especially,
have to come back immediately and change it because of a
I
court
mean, they
ruling.
Do this
well,
all the
look,
time.
The vouchers, as I said earlier, the vouchers mm-hmm. issue was setting up as a cause celeb for the next session,
right.
The way that Sanctuary Cities or voter ID was last
right.
session.
And
the people who pay such close attention on the conservative right to such things are not going to be happy if this thing gets kicked
exactly.
under the rug.
But you can be a cause celeb and not succeed, as we've seen with
Sanctuary Cities, right, yeah.
So, but the thing that, going back to the committees,
people grousing about the fact that it went away and the way that it went away. So.
Yeah.
But the wheels have been greased so much in favor of vouchers with Patrick as the committee chair.
I agree, and we'll have to see if Perry puts it on the emergency items list as is rumored to be in consideration. So.
Didn't you ask him about that?
I did, and he said something about boots and halfway around the world or some law.
Yeah, that's
and
sort of that was sort of like his answer on the Fisher case this morning on CBS. He was asked about it, and he sort of said, well, you know, waffled, the Supreme Court will decide. I'm for diversity generally, but how to go about it, that's up to the Supreme Court. You know, it's like, well, whatever.
It gives him an
answer. He said the university will populate.
He asked if race was the best way to go about populating. Right. Ben, what do you think?
I'm not
populate
gonna
as a verb was strange.
Shall we
like think of bunnies?
Which is why I wasn't going to answer that question.
Right, if you recall the last conversation I had with the governor on this subject, he knows that bunnies don't just happen magically.
Exactly.
From his own experience, he knows.
That was the last. It's Satan that does it, right?
No, I'm talking about the conversation before that.
Satan creates
bunnies,
his minions of bunnies.
I'm talking about the Nookie bunnies conversation work. Rather than the Satan conversation.
Oh, I always conflate those two.
Which one draws more traffic? I'm just...
Speaking of traffic, Ben did drive down to South Texas recently.
Not much traffic.
I love that drive. It's very easy.
Yeah, yes.
Down 281?
Very rarely any traffic. Anyway,
I did
why
not get arrested
there?
Like Fiona Apple. It was great.
And you had so many more drugs than you did.
That's right. So, you know, my station's just doing a big series on voter engagement. You know, why aren't people voting in greater numbers, especially younger people? So I went down to the Rio Grande Valley and just looked at some of their new efforts they have down there to get people involved. And one of the things that kind of is a sticking point for some in getting involved in not just being a voter, but being a candidate down there, which is the kind of old politiquera system of...
Could you pronunciate that
politiquera?
Again?
This is very politiquera? Different from when Julian's on the Tripcast.
Yes. The politiquera system where they essentially people round up votes and offer them to the candidates at a price. You have some younger voters and just voters in general down there. They're like, you know, why should I bother to get involved in elections? My vote's not going to count. You've got some candidates that say they can't even consider running for something because... either they refuse to use the system, or they're not picked by the party bosses down there to be able to run, and just makes it too hard for them. Or I mean, you know, it's the big thing that's happening now is the DA down in McAllen in Hidalgo County is beginning an investigation on assisted voting, which has spiked over the last couple of years. It's a legal practice. You take a friend in who is either disabled or illiterate, and you help them vote in the voting booth. And they've seen a giant spike over the last 2 years, last two elections of people who, according to the DA, the county can't possibly, and I am going to quote him here, the county can't possibly have that many stupid people or disabled people that would need help in voting.
He underestimates the counties of Texas.
Right.
Is this the voter fraud that we have heard so much about, that voter ID
that
is going to prevent?
No,
you know, this is hilarious. My story ran just on KUT Wednesday morning, and I was playing it for my wife last night. And
didn't it also run on the Tribune?
It did run on the Tribune as well, yes, on Wednesday morning. But
doesn't your wife also like the Tribune?
She does. She does. She wants a Tribune softball jersey. But
not anymore. Not after last night's game.
That's right. She was listening to the story, and she said, now, how will voter ID help this situation? And I said, well, actually, voter ID doesn't help this situation at all. And that's been one of the arguments that... that's been given at the Capitol for why, you know, voter ID being,
because even if someone's paying for your vote, you can still have an ID.
Correct. Or right. If somebody's assisting you, you walk in with this person, the person tells the election judges or election officials, I am assisting this person. You then walk over, and the idea is that it's not that they necessarily vote for you, but they are standing there to watch and see who you're voting for so that they can, you know. In some of the school districts there are rumors of or accusations of managers coming into like the cafeteria workers and saying, okay, we're all going to go and vote today, and you're supposed to vote for candidate X, and I'm going to assist all of you to watch and see that you vote for candidate X. And if you don't, you could be fired.
That's like the Queen
really
of Versailles
happen?
Boss.
It, you know,
that might be a reference you guys don't
does
know.
That,
I'm
that's,
trying to remember.
The star of that documentary, big rich guy, basically emailed his employees and said, you know, if you vote for if Obama wins, then I'll have to fire all of you.
Was that Papa John's Pizza?
No, it was the Westgate guy.
Yeah. Him and his wife starred in this movie, or whatever the correct grammar for that is, Queen of Versailles, which is a pretty good documentary. About building the largest house in the country.
Him and his wife starred, says the Vanderbilt graduate.
Well, I didn't go to Dartmouth at UT.
I was going to say, maybe if you'd gone to Dartmouth, this would be better.
Is
Willie Geist going to be this non-grammatical on the Today Show? Is that a Vanderbilt problem?
Yeah, don't even get me started. I was nowhere near the top 10% of my high school class.
Don't you mean
Vanderbilt? Now, if you're asking.
Vanderbilt.
So what did Aaron Pena say he was going to do to fix all this stuff? On his free time, now that he's not in the legislature.
In terms of doing something in the legislature, he's not. He tried to pass a voter assistance bill in the last legislative session, was, you know, attacked for doing it, and it did not pass. I mean, I guess Republicans weren't even on board that idea either, since there were 2/3 Republicans in the House, but it did not pass. But now the Democratic DA of Hidalgo is taking it up and is, you know, convening grand juries and has 2 additional investigators to look into the idea of assisted voting.
Is this a South Texas phenomenon, or does it happen all over the state?
It's a South Texas phenomenon. You know, the history that I've been given on it is it comes from the old boss systems where you would have a white rancher down there who made sure that all of his employees voted correctly, it's just kind of evolved from there. They don't have bosses so much as they do have the politicaras that go around and offer voters.
We don't have bosses so much either now that Evan just walked out.
Well, you know, he's never enjoyed, you know, the truth. No.
Or the Tribcast.
And I'm sure that Michael Quinn Sullivan will grab that line.
He's never enjoyed the truth. Yeah. Well, on that note.
Yeah, really. Everybody else is left.
I guess not on behalf of Evan.
No.
Since he's gone. On behalf of Ben, Emily, our producer Todd, our blood brother Ted Nugent, this is Reeve. Thanks for listening.
In general, women are terrible.
I hope to Christ you're recording, Todd. Are you recording, Todd? Oh, thank you, Jesus. Okay.